Episode number 207 with Steve and Mike. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
And this is Mike Snyderman.
How the hell are you, Mikey? It's been a while.
I know, Steve. Brazil.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead. Tell us about it. I'll take a 40-minute nap and you can tell your story.
Oh, it was a fucking blast, man. It was so much fun. I flew into the capital and I spent maybe 2 days there. And then after that, I kind of talked to a bunch of people, found out where I wanted to go. I went up to Natal, which is this beach town. And oh my God, it is so cheap, dude. I got a hotel room for $40 a night that was right on the beach. I mean, sitting poolside, getting whatever I wanted off the menu, it was never more than $6. Beers were about $1.50, and they were for the giant ones, the 600 milliliters. It was pretty epic. Just went swimming every day. After that, I met up with my buddy down in Rio de Janeiro. We saw Christ the Redeemer up on the hill. And then, where did we go after that? We went to this little island, called Fernando de Noronha. It was kind of like, I think, Brazil's Hawaii. It was way off the coast. It took a several-hour plane ride to get there. It was very pretty out there. And then after that, I went back to Recife for a night or two, and then back down to Sao Paulo, and then flew back home. But it was cool. It was a lot of fun. Very relaxing. I was trying to prep for a half marathon while I was out there, and I think I pushed it a little because I injured my calf. And I don't know that I'll be able to run the half by the end of the month, but I ran yesterday and I ran 3 miles and it felt pretty damn good. I feel a little sore today, but I don't feel the injury at all. So I'm going to slowly start stacking this up and maybe I'll be able to do it. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it was a great fucking vacation, man.
It's funny talking about the marathon. Your last podcast I was listening to, and you're describing down there, and you're like, well, I'm still going to be training for the half marathon. And you're like, well, I'll be studying Portuguese. You're like, I'm getting ready for the WSOP. Naturally, Steve, you get more done on vacation than I do in 12 months.
I can't seem to turn it off, man. I just love to work. It's fun, you know. Even when I was up in Natal, this vacation was really, really good for me to like let go of my past with my ex. Just being by myself for 2 weeks where you're kind of forced into your own thoughts, and it was probably one of the most like mentally healing vacations that I've had in a very long time. My buddy Joe even noticed it. He's like, you just seem more relaxed and calm now, and you're not like uptight, and it was really good for me, like mentally.
Wasn't a vacation. You're trying to stay busy to forget. You were
exactly.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. A lot of it was just letting go. And I even have a girlfriend now.
Really?
Yeah. I did not think that would happen quite as quickly as it did, but, I'm at her house now. She was a big help too. She took one tip that she said that, really worked for her was you write down like all the stuff about your ex, your past, you know, you just write it down, just like no filter. There's no editing. It's just, you just write all that shit, just like vomit on a page. And then you keep reading it. And eventually like you don't feel anything anymore when you read it. And when you get to that point, then you burn it. And there's something therapeutic about that, that it's tough for me to describe what it's like unless you do it. It really works.
And, so how many years has this woman been dropping acid anyways?
Less than five, right?
Tell me more about the woman here, Steve, if you don't know, or is this,
No.
Would you meet her? Is this a gringo or a gringa or where?
No. She's a Mexican gal. We met probably 4 months ago, maybe on one of the dating apps. It was Plenty of Fish.
Okay.
And met up for coffee and then just had a lunch date and then just started hanging out after that. And yeah, she's been incredibly supportive. And, you know, a few months ago, I wrote down all the things that I was looking for in a girlfriend. And I came across that list recently. And I was like, huh.
Why'd you say three boobs, Steve? Come on.
One in the back.
Oh, okay. No, sorry.
One in the back.
Yeah. There you are, finally opening up to us, Steve. You're opening us up to us in a nice way, and here I am trying to sabotage it. No, please, yeah.
It would be out of character if you didn't. Well, yeah, it's cool. I really like spending time with her. She's already met my parents.
Wow. Okay. So how old is she? Does she work here? Is she from the area, or is she?
Yeah, she lives in Simi, which. If you guys don't live in Southern California, you probably have no idea how far that is from Ventura. It's about maybe a 40 to 45 minute drive. So a lot more local than South America.
Okay.
She works at Amgen, which is a big pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
Like a project manager. She's 40 years old, which is uncharacteristic of me.
Yeah, Steve. I was expecting to say 19.
Uh-huh.
She's going to be getting her braces off any day kind of thing.
She's taking her second semester at junior college. Yeah, no, it's very unusual for me, but yeah, I dig it. It's a lot of fun. She just had shoulder surgery, so I've been at her house for the last 5 or 6 days taking care of her. She can barely do anything.
She gets the nice Barton omelet in the morning.
And she does, yeah. She gets the Barton omelet with the spinach in there and all the veggies and stuff, little side of apple or some kind of fruit. Yeah.
Mm. I'm jealous, Steve. I might have to throw myself down some stairs and break a hip just to get you. Sorry, Steve. I need your help.
I need a week of your attention. But yeah, that's what's been going on with me. How about you? How you been the last month?
You know, same old, lots of poker.
Okay, cool.
Stumbling around in a stoner haze.
Right on.
Good blocking deal. Out the pain.
Indica, sativa, what are we doing?
I don't even know. Just some edible stuff, you know. I just stick stuff in my mouth. Although, you know, I've actually legitimately like the other day I told myself I bring some, but I'm only going to use it if I have back pain, and I'm like in a lot of pain these days, like right from the go. Like I kind of need it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I probably spent $10,000 or more on massages last year, Steve.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like I get them. I mean, a lot of it is just, oh, okay. You know, it's only a dollar a minute here. And, you know, I'm kind of friends with them all and stuff, but I legitimately need it. Like after like 6 or 8 hours, I'm in pain and it's like the massage, like gets me back on track. So that's now the back is worse than last year. So I need kind of a solution. Although there's a guy there who told me to try mustard oil. Have you ever tried this? I know you're into every sort of feel good thing there is.
No.
And I guess it really, I've tried it, and it feels better. I don't know if it's psychosomatic or whatever the word is there. You push it in, it's supposed to, you know, reduce inflammation. It does feel pretty good.
Okay.
So between that and, you know, lowering the dope dose, I've managed to play a lot of hours of poker and, you know, slightly, you know, around where I want to be in win rate, which is like, you'll hear me complain where I can reach my goals and I'm still have trouble getting ahead. You know what I mean? That just pays the bills.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I think, I don't know. I think the chances of me going to Vegas are like dropping like daily here. So well, we'll see.
I saw your tweet about you're selling 30% of your action at no markup.
Well, this is how fragile my ego is, Steve. When I got no responses within like 18 hours, I just took it down and I'm like, okay, this is a sign. Nobody.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, what if some guy only gets on Twitter once every 2 days?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think the gig is up, Steve. People realize I'm not good at poker. I haven't had a good result in a while here.
I think you're selling yourself short, especially at no fucking markup, dude.
Well, it's just not the best way to spend my money going there, man. It really isn't. I mean, I guess I can, you know, I get five free days on my diamond card, and then I can stay cheap someplace else, and then, you know, try to, you know, I guess it's the, but I'm also going to be paying, if I leave there for a week, I pay aftercare, child care for my son.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me. Someone's like, well, just go out for the weekend then and play two events and, you know, play the tag team when you and Jason are going to be there. But I don't know. I either want to go to Vegas or not go to Vegas. And right now it's going to be a pretty last minute thing. Jason's like asking me, and I'm like, finally, I'm like, okay, let's just set something in concrete. If I have a big month in cash, if I make $15,000 this month, then I go. So
well, could you play? I mean, I know you just like fire 1Ks. Like, can you play $400 and $600 tournaments daily and then not have to get backed?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or just charge a little markup. Maybe just sell 10 or 20% of your action at a little bit of markup to kind of pay for your time and just play those. I mean, the first place in those things is like 30 to 50K. I mean, that's not
right. Right.
You know what I mean? That'll make your whole fucking month.
Well, a lot of the reason I'm going there is just like I said, this is why it's to go there. It's like to serve ego. I want a bracelet. I want to go deep in one of these things. You know what I mean? So if it's just about, well, you know, financially, okay, maybe the win is better. Financially, it's always better for me just to not to travel and just grind out low limit cash here. I've kind of finally cracked the code with that. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm totally neurotic on the issue here. I'm like telling myself, let's be an adult and make the best decision. But it's not, like you said, it's not a horrible decision there if I'm getting backed, if I get a little markup. If I, you know, grind some cash there, look for good soft games and game select in that respect. If I get knocked out of a tournament at the win, then not fire a second bullet with 20 buying in for 25 bigs. Just sit down and play some 2-5 and make some money there.
Yeah.
We'll see, Steve. What you've already told me a billion times. I think I remember you saying like 3 or 4 weeks you're gonna be out there this summer.
Yeah, I'm going out June, I think 9th to June 24th or 25th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Are you selling a package? Have you broken down your schedule and what you're?
I have not. I think I'm going to sell a little bit. I'll probably play a few 1Ks, maybe a 1500 or something, and I'll probably sell maybe half of that. But I don't really want to come out with a schedule. I think I'm just going to kind of do it spur of the moment like I did last time on Twitter. We'll have a few shows in between now and then. So if you guys are interested in buying a piece of a couple of those, I'll have a better idea as we get closer. But yeah, I think I'm gonna have everything to myself in 600s and below, and then anything above that, I'll probably sell the rest. So, yeah, I do want to play at least one bracelet event, and then maybe like a bigger one at the Wynn. You know, sometimes they have them on the weekends there. It's not the 400 or 600; they'll have a 1100 or something like that. I'll probably sell off some of that.
I'm looking at the events at your time that are under 1,000 for bracelet events. And on the June 16th, there's the $800 no limit hold'em deep stack for it. So that's pretty good. $750,000 guaranteed prize pool.
Nice.
And on the same day you get knocked out, you just go up and play the $600 online no limit hold'em knockout bounty. That should be a good one. You're plus EV in that for sure. You can sell that at a little markup, I think.
Oh yeah.
And then Wednesday, the 19th, the $500 No Limit Hold'em Turbo Deep Stack online, if you want to try a shot at that. I'm just taking a look here. And you said you're leaving the 26th?
24, 25, or 26. Depends if we go day two in the tag team.
Okay. And then the 23rd, okay, $800 No Limit Hold'em. And Sunday, there's a 1K. It looks like, I guess that's a little, Sundays is a low buy-in ring bracelet event and an online event there. It looks like they're trying to get some, looking for some sort of consistency.
So all these were at the Rio, right?
This is all Rio stuff.
The, yeah. The 16th, we got an 800 deep stack, and the 23rd, we got an 800 no limit hold'em.
Yeah, so that could be...
Okay. Yeah, I'll play those. That sounds like fun. I can't wait. I've been studying so much.
What are you studying at? TPE videos, I assume?
TPE and then a lot of Alex's videos going through his. He's got some great fucking content. Man, when you sign up for his program, then you kind of get on his newsletter. And okay. This guy is just cranking out shit every single day. You know, yes. Just all these random free videos, we're just going to take a, you know, half an hour and talk about three betting. It's really, really cool. But yeah, I've been going through his program. A lot of the listeners have been tacking on as well. I assume they're going to be out at the WSOP or they just want to get better at their game. But yeah, very, very cool shit. It gotten me super psyched about cards because I didn't get to play for a month. And I was starting to feel the itch, like I need to be doing something. I need to be prepping somehow, you know. It's cool. It's been keeping me plugged into the game.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, Assassin. You guys are brothers from another mother, man. The two of
I
you.
Think so.
But you guys don't. You guys don't have a lot of wasted days.
No, like, his work ethic is like I thought. I knew how to crank out some production. That guy's on a whole new level. He just. Fucking grinds. That guy can work. It's impressive.
Yeah, I think. He's pretty similar to you in that way. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's half like he'll be telling us anecdote. He's like, "Well, I was reading some science fiction novel while watching the Mariners game, and you know, he needs to." Yes. He's even more like you. Like, if he doesn't have two things going on at once, it's he's feeling deprived. I think.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but so what else has been going on? You've been playing cash. Have you played any online?
I've had a couple Sundays on ACR.
Okay.
I don't want to have a depressing conversation about Bitcoin because now it's going up again here.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
So it's marched up, but like I've been hoping for the last, few months that I would have a nice little rush online, have a little, 20, 25K stretch where I could get back into Bitcoin because, kind of sensing that maybe at some point it's going to spring up, but no luck online. And of course, now we've seen a big surge where I think it was down like 3,200 at one point. Now it's up to, it's doubled since this low point. Whatever.
Yeah, it's up at 8K right now is what I see. I moved everything into Ethereum, which I kind of wish I would have just moved everything into fucking Bitcoin because that has gone up far more than Ethereum has, but fucking whatever. Litecoin's up to 100, Bitcoin Cash 400, Ethereum 240.
I don't want to go back and look to see. Look back to see how low I had to sell some of this stuff. I know the Bitcoin Cash is the one that really drove me nuts. Yeah. I bought some of that. I've told that story just because there's some asshole at the casino is talking about how great it is and talking about the technology and this and that. It'll be 7,000 soon, and I immediately took my cell phone out and bought like $12,000 worth.
Oh shit.
And I bought them all for like $1,200, $1,400, and I had to sell them all like at whatever the low point was, like $150 each.
Yeah, yeah.
So I lost a shitload on the Bitcoin Cash, which is just I'm a gambler, Steve. What can you do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have been doing the day trading. I'm getting a little bit
into forgot about that.
Swing trading. So swing trading is more like you buy a stock now and then you sell it within 3 days to 2 to 3 months. And I just sold one yesterday. I've been doing it with my buddy Danny, and I bought and sold Coke. So some of the tipping points that I look for is like Coca-Cola about a month and a half ago, all of a sudden one day just took a complete shit and went from like $50 down to $45. Don't know why it happened. I don't really care. I just kind of look at the patterns. And then now what I do is I wait for that stock to go back up and then come back down right to the point to where it dropped. And then I buy. And that's what I did. And then I just sold it yesterday at 49. So I put a grand in, made a little less than $100. But the way I look at it is it's all about the long game. You know, I put in $1,000 a month and a half ago, got an 8% return in a month and a half, pulled my money out. And I've got maybe a dozen of these different stocks. Just kind of, I look at them like little savings accounts. You know what I mean? I'm only making $100 here, $70 there. But as the bankroll grows, instead of buying a grand worth, I'll buy $2,000. And it's just like these little savings accounts that are just plugging away. And some of them are really cool. And my buddy Danny is really good at finding these, is they'll pay like a 6% dividend. And so if your stock just goes sideways, if you buy it at $60 and 3 months later, it's still at $60. Well, you still made 6%, even though it didn't go up, you know, it,
right.
It's kind of neat. It's a neat little game.
Well, you're having fun with it, and it's
it's fun.
I still say there's. I mean, this is not something where you're guaranteed income.
No,
I mean, no. shit could go bad. But so right now, what would be your expected the amount of trades you do in a month? You do like what, 3,000 or 4,000 trades, and you know, basically like $800 a month right now would be $800 to $1,000 a month right now would be your expected profit.
My profit right now per month on the swing trades is about $400.
Okay.
$400 a month. On the other trades, if I can get in two a week, the daily trades, like the quick in and out, I was really hoping for like 25 an hour, but that was just way too fucking optimistic. I gotta be betting like $300 to $400 a bet to be making that. So I'm only making about $7 or $8 an hour doing that, which is in the green, but it's kind of frustrating because it's just like, it's not really worth your time. You know what I mean? I could sit on grind on Ignition and make a lot more than that.
Right.
But it's taken me longer to get this down than I thought I would. And some of the limiting factors are my bankroll. And the other limiting factor is knowledge. You know, there's like every little trade, I learned something just a little bit different. And I'm like, what the hell? I had 3 out of 4 setups right there. I fired. It's like, oh, well, see, that wasn't quite a reversal bar. It was just down a little bit, you know, and things like that. It's like, oh, okay, note to self, that probably wasn't the best bet to make, you know. So just learning. And just, you know, sending my stuff into my mentor, and he's like, well, yeah, I guess you could make that bet, but you're probably only 53-54% instead of the 70% that you thought you were. I'm like, okay. So it's slow and tedious, but it's very interesting. I just wish I could turn a better profit at it doing the daily stuff, you know.
I don't want to go on a political rant, but this is this is kind of, there's people doing what you do who are have like billions, of course.
Yeah.
Like, who basically runs the country. And it's like, that's exactly how they're just, like, they're just gambling.
Yeah.
And making, you know, good bet, you know, and just slicing off pieces of the economy for themselves, basically, you know, not creating or anything, just getting in the margins while all the rest of the dopes are just kind of, you know, waiting around. And, and then when things went to shit, of course, in 2008, all the, you know, everything tanked and all the mortgage crisis, then the taxpayer had to bail these bastards out.
Yeah.
And it was appalling. Like, there should have been, these guys should have been getting arrested. They weren't getting arrested. We were writing them checks. They were getting their bonuses. Yes. It's just fucking absurd. Yeah. It's kind of funny. I don't know if you remember, because I asked him when we had it, that was one of the first guests we had, is Jared Tendler. Mm-hmm. He was talking about how he had a lot of the Wall Street guys, and I'm like, talking about how they're, I'm like, they're probably more, they're probably just as bad as the poker players. He's like, much worse.
Hmm.
I mean, they're just degenerate gamblers.
Yeah.
This is who has the future of the country in the hand. But anyways, but Steve, yeah, just quickly on your, you know, checking, watching the, like, I think I've told you again, I don't know all the specifics on the financial, but I know for sure a great majority of financial transactions in this country are done by computer. I mean, the computers are actually making the decisions.
Yeah.
So you have different individuals and different companies basically competing to who has the best software to act a little quicker. You know what I mean? And will read the trends just a little bit better.
Yeah.
So you're not, whatever you're doing, it's not nearly as good as the geniuses who put together the supercomputer. So like if your ROI is 10%, other people are 30, but either way, you've got it knocked and it's profitable. But
the way it was described to me is that you're basically, the game is basically trying to predict what all these Wall Street guys are going to do before they do it and learning what they've been taught and what little strike points or what little cues they're looking for, and then acting on it at the same time they are. Because I am in no way influencing the market by just buying 100 here, a grand there, little bits and pieces like that. When these guys are buying millions and millions of dollars, they're the ones that are actually influencing the buying and selling. And I'm just trying to predict what they're going to do before they do it. And when I see these certain indicators, just like they do, then more often than not, I'm right, and it does what I thought it was going to do. Things that you cannot control are like the news. You know, Elon Musk will send out a fucking tweet, and then the Tesla price drops $50 a share or whatever. Like, you can't control that. There's no way you can anticipate it. And by the time you find out that it's happened, it's too late. You know, so it's just pattern recognition. It's like a guy playing chess, memorizing patterns and memorizing openings. It's the same shit, just a different game.
Okay.
And it's that's basically what it is. I mean, you got 400,000 of these kids working on Wall Street, gambling billionaires' money, and they're the ones that are swinging the market. And if you can predict what the majority of them are going to do as or just before they do it, then you win. If you predict wrong, then you lose. You know, they're the ones that are dictating whether the graph is going up or down. And you got to guess whether they're going to buy or sell. That's it.
So if you had to make a prediction here, I don't know if in your, I know you're being very responsible with bankroll and all that. And your end goal here might be to be just a professional investor. You get up and have the coffee and spend 2 hours in front of the computer and you're cranking in the money. So what's the timeline for that? I mean, like right now you're making, you know, 300 month here, 400 month there. When can you make 10 to 15K a month with this, you think? Is that 5 years down the road or?
I don't know. My overall game plan, I got 10 years left with the department. After that, I plan on just being a full-time gambler, whether it's stocks or sports or poker, all of the, probably some combination of all of those. But as far as like, if I could retire, man, if I could make 10K a month, I wouldn't need to work at the fire department. If I could get to that before I actually retire, then I would leave. It's a dangerous job. I've done it a long time. It's definitely not good for your health. But I don't know. I don't know what the,
you don't have a magic number. Like once I have $300,000 in my account, I know I can get 3 or 4% of that each month kind of shit.
Yeah. I haven't thought of it. And that's interesting because I'm so into writing goals. I should write that down and verbalize it and kind of start working towards it, you know?
Right.
Maybe 3 years might be a little soon. Maybe five is realistic. I don't want to make it too unrealistic or, you know, say like next year or something like that. I don't know. That's something that I would even be able to accomplish. But maybe by the time I'm 45, that would be a good age to leave the department. A lot of guys get broken down like once they start approaching 50, their shoulders, their knees and backs go.
Right.
You know, they end up spending their retirement just on the fucking surgeon's table.
Well, to be just 5 years away from the your nice, don't you get like half? You get like a real good. Most of these fire departments have pretty good retirement packages. Like, what do you get? Like half pay forever?
Mine's pretty damn good. If we're going through a lot of stuff right now that they're trying to take away our big chunk of our retirement. When I got hired, shortly after I got hired, we negotiated a 3% at 50 years old, which what that means is for every year that you work, you get 3% of your base salary, and it'll cap out at 30 years. So the most you could get is 90% of your base salary, but you can't collect that until you're 50 years old. Now, the guys that came on after me, they got on another tier, and they got, I believe it's 2.5% or like 2.75%, and they got to work until they're 57. So they definitely got a
that's quite a difference.
Yeah.
So difference. Yeah. That's so basically you're looking at if you quit when you're 50, how old? That'd be 25 years in the department, or even more, right?
I'd have 30 years on. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, there you go. 75% or 90% of your pay, or
90% of my base pay. For the rest of my life. And I think it goes up like 1-2% a year for cost of living.
Christ.
So yeah, it's a good deal.
That's absurd. I mean, how many, yeah, there's just not a lot of things you can retire at, Steve, at for that young. I mean,
I know.
50, well, 50 of course looks very, to you, it doesn't look young. To me, it feels very young right now. Like the fact that I can, you know, whatever you get, $75,000 a year for life, you know, for.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to make it there. You know, that's the thing. Guys get hit by cars, we fall through roofs, and you just don't make it, you know? So it's like every day you go to work, you're rolling the dice.
I bet there's very, very few firemen, though, who quit their jobs a few years before they're eligible for that.
You know well, what if I quit at 45, I would basically get 3 times 45, would it be 75%?
Oh, you'd still get that.
At 3 times 25, so I would get 75% of my base salary.
Oh, you'd have to wait for 5 years.
I'd have to wait for 5 years until I get to 50. If I hang on for another 5 years, then I would get 90% at 50.
Right.
It doesn't. If you quit a year early or something, it doesn't fucking go away. You just
okay. I thought you had to like work till you're 50 maybe or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So. First world problems, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Steve, I don't know. I mean, I kind of mock the fire department. I mean, you're great at your job. It's an important job, but it really is an amazing job for pay and benefits here, Steve. I mean, you spend half the year and, you know, flying around your plane and playing cards and traveling. I mean, I don't, you know.
True. You know, that's what Alex said when I met him in New York. He said, you know, you realize you're living every poker player's dream right now, right? Like, he's all, this is what all professional poker players want to do, is what you're doing. Like, they don't want to have to sit at the table all the time. They'd rather do that.
But yeah,
the grass is always greener, right?
Whenever, of course, you tell a story about your job, it's going to be doing something interesting where, you know, most of your job, isn't it, Steve? Let's be honest. Like, hey, I won 17 straight games of Boggle today. Like that's like the most interesting thing that happens at work, isn't it?
Most of the time it's routine shit. We, at my station, we average about 10 calls in a 24-hour period. 6 out of 10 of those are medical calls, you know, diabetic, that any one of us could do in our sleep after you've been doing this job for a while.
Right.
The other 3 out of 10 are kind of random stuff, traffic accidents, you know, kitty in a tree, a power line down, stuff okay. like that. The other 1 out of 10 are some sort of fire, whether that's a car fire, a garage fire, a trash can fire, a smoking electrical outlet, whatever. So for me, the most fun I have at my job are on the structure fires, the ones where a building is burning, you know, something like that, where, you know, you show up with very little information other than we have a fire in a strip mall, and you're first on scene. You have to find a fire hydrant, somehow visualize in your head how to get the water from that hydrant to the engine in a way that's not going to put hose in the way of all the other fire engines coming in. and be able to articulate over the radio what you need each of the other fire engines and trucks to do and where to go and what assignments to give them. And meanwhile, there's people screaming and it's just complete chaos in front of you, but you got to get on the radio and almost sound bored, you know, because if you get excited now, we've got a lot of new guys on now, at least on my department, you know, they're going to get amped up and then they're going to make mistakes, you know? So you got to be chill and cool when it's just chaos in front of you. I mean, I love it, you know, and my boss right now, which is one of my really good friends, he and I work really well together on fires now. He's got the same sort of mindset and just, you know, calm presence that really helps. And we work really well together whenever we go on fire. So that's the part of my job that I love. Okay. That unfortunately only happens about 2 out of every 100 calls. So you got to kind of put in a month of work before you get you know, an interesting one like that. And the rest is,
and this is why many arsonists are actually firemen, Steve, right? Because they're just, they get bored. Okay, well, that's interesting. How about a woman who leaves your apartment with a scorching case of herpes? Is that, where does that fall into the category?
I think that would kind of cross over between the fire and the medical call.
Okay.
It would be a duality call right there. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a scorching case. Oh, fuck.
I actually had a couple dates, Steve.
Did you? How'd they go?
I can't remember if we talked about it. I'm not into it, Steve.
No.
I've got my love of my life. I'm just going to, it's an excuse not to do anything, but it also, I do obsess over her. I'll just, maybe one day she won't be married any again.
Okay.
Of course she won't be. So, no, I don't know, man. I don't know how to describe it. I will make no compromises in life. Let's put it that way, which is terrible.
Okay.
So this is what I'm going to do. So it's going to be like a woman at the casino, I think, you know, like a card player or masseuse there. And there's just not a lot of those around, you know, but, like a couple dates.
Where'd you guys go?
One of them, it was just meet for a glass of wine. And one of them was just meet for a cup of coffee.
And, okay. Nothing there.
No, not really. Well, one of them I did like, and she wasn't really interested in me, I don't think. But then I had a couple dates set up, which I just canceled at the last minute.
Really?
And one woman was like, it's just like, I don't know. I just didn't want to, I can't explain it. It's just, I finally learned how to live alone.
Yeah.
I mean, there's times where I have a intense desire for some sort of a companionship, but it's, I just don't want to be out there again. I don't know if it's protect myself emotionally or whatever. A lot of it is laziness. Like I'm joking. Like I'm going through the dating apps there, and I'm looking, and I'll see, oh, this woman lives, you know, 20 minutes away. I'm sorry, she's got to be a 10 to go that far. Like that just feels like a long way. You know what I mean?
I will not drive 20 minutes for an 8.5. Not happening.
No, I mean, like I want like a girl from the neighborhood around the block, and so that's part of it too, is laziness and just seeing. Yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see. We'll see what I. That's about all. But I erased a couple of the dating apps, and I still might. That was one of the reasons I lost weight. Like, I mean, I wanted to get healthier, but I'm like, yeah, you know, this, I'm going back into the dating, and I just realized I don't give a shit.
Okay. Okay.
So that might be the.
Well, you used to be quite the terror when it came to dating. I mean, you were.
Well, that's all I thought about is women. I mean, yeah. it really is an addiction. I mean, one of these days, Steve, we'll talk about a love addiction. I'll do a little research, and then I have gone to a few meetings.
Really?
Really worked the program, but it's. I can't remember. Do we get into, like, I told you, there's one woman I went just absolutely bananas for here.
Yeah.
A few months earlier, and you know, just kind of embarrassed myself, and like, just it took a while to recover.
Okay.
Emotionally, like literally, I'm just have trouble sleeping. Every 9 seconds, I'm looking at my cell phone, just hoping, you know, she texted.
She texted, blah, blah, blah. Something, yeah.
And so it's just, there's a part of me that thrives on that. I like, same thing as the gambler. You want to get punished.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just putting myself in position, like deliberately. There's women who've liked me. I've deliberately fucked it up just so I could I couldn't even explain the psychology. It's not even rational.
Interesting.
But I don't know, Steve. I used to get all sorts of women, but this is when I was, for years I was living like a frat boy.
Yeah.
You're just in bars and you're drinking and you're young and you're, you know, tall, good looking dude. I don't even know,
women a night, like it's just gonna happen.
Yeah, it just didn't happen. I remember my buddies were there to drink, and I was always like the ladies' man. They'd be looking, they're like, oh, it's cold tonight. It's kind of slow tonight. Nothing's going to happen. I'm like, don't worry. I'm going to grind this one out.
Yeah.
I'd always end up making out or hooking up with some chick. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Without studying or practicing the pickup stuff, there's a couple things I naturally, you know, had going for me that I realized, like developing rapport.
Yeah.
Like, I always get that. I feel like I've known you forever stuff after like 12 minutes.
Yeah,
just because I'm curious, I'm asking questions about, you know. And then the other one is like, create physical contact right away. I remember it was one. I'm like, you know, yeah, I always did that. I'm always right away touching their hand and doing all this stuff. Not as a technique, but that's just the way I am.
That's just, yeah, that was natural.
So if there's any little instinct of attraction to me, that's gonna, yeah, it's gonna escalate really pretty quickly. And like, you know, my buddies were always, I'm an old man bragging here, but they were always amazed because I'd go over and talk to a woman and like, you know, 5 minutes later we'd be making out.
Yeah.
But this is young women in bars, not older. You know, it's kind of funny. I have this one guy who did, he's a couple of years older than me, and he was just recently single, and I had him help me with my profile and all the stuff. And he's, you know, he got a lot of chicks from the, a lot of 40-year-old chicks are not against going out for dinner and giving a blowjob on the beach the first night, you know,
yeah.
If that was your goal. But for the most part, I think, Steve, I don't know how to, women are women. They're amazing. So you can't say I'm going to give up. But like I said, I came to California, and for like 4 years, I kind of protected myself from just being in that situation.
Yeah.
And then I did it. Now I'm like, you know, I just don't want to be there again. One must keep their soul limber somehow, Steve. So if it's not women, I'll have to start working in a soup kitchen. I don't know. Somehow feel the.
Well, in dry spells, there's always the Asian massage parlors.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
It's good for a quick loosen you up and pat you on the ass and send you on your way.
Yeah, you know, I actually was thinking about that. I have a buddy. He no longer plays where in Oceans down where I play.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him because he was very open about this and like talking about all the, you know, and he's like, well, you know, the website I used no longer exists. Of course.
The dark web.
So that's a possibility, Steve, but porn has saved me in a certain level.
Yes.
It just sucks the life out of you.
You're like, wow.
It really does.
I started at noon and it's already 3:30 in the afternoon. Where did the day go?
Oh, you wouldn't even believe medically how often I can do it each day, Steve. It really is like a lunatic. It's got to be. I've set records. I really have. There's no question about it.
Need a woman with an equal sex drive there. What's your ideal woman? Like what age? You're 47 now?
48.
48. What's your ideal age for a woman? Like the girlfriend, describe her.
I don't like. I have the one woman who I'm just absolutely in love with, who's older than me.
Okay.
But for the most part, and like that wouldn't even like if she was like 300 pounds, I wouldn't care.
Okay.
It's not even about sex. It's about how much love this woman gave me, and what a wonderful person she is, and how I just treated her badly, and. How I would like to really contribute to her happiness, and that, which, you know, she is all these things right now without me. So I'm sure. I don't know, Steve, like you, I'm now got to a point though, where I really, just for sake of ego, I want a younger woman, I think.
Okay.
I hate to be ageist against, you know, I don't know if people over the age of 40 should be even allowed to touch each other. I mean, it's gross. Let's be honest. No, but on these dating apps, man, there's women who, to me, I mean, I look young. Everybody tells me, oh, I thought you were like 34. I mean, people are always.
You're like me. You got the baby face. Yeah.
So, for that reason, I mean, I think I told you when I was 40, I've heard ego, you know, I hooked up with a chick who was 19. So, I think a young woman might be where it's at for me just because of my personality. I'm such the man child.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so Young is what, 19 or 35?
Young is like, well, Young is like 30 to 33 or something.
Okay.
Probably. Well, I think we've talked about that. Someone gave me this idea, and if you think it kind of works out, like what a man can date is you take half your age and add 7 to it. So if you're 30 years old, you can date a 22-year-old. You're 48, you can date a 31-year-old.
Okay.
So somewhere near the bottom of that arc, I think. And like I said, women in their 40s right now, a lot of them have kids. They don't want another kid. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? That's pretty much what I am.
That was a big thing in mine is I had to, when I wrote it down, was I said that she does not want children and doesn't have any.
I mean, I kind of want to have another kid, so that's not a problem.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. So I want a little girl, but I want to be just come home and play with her, read her books and get, you know, I don't want to be going to doctor's appointments and doing shopping, a lot of other shit. So I guess that's not, so it'll be,
so the wife will do that.
Well, the mother always gets the bad end of this deal with the parenting, I think, or does more work with it usually. But having another kid, I wouldn't be, I wouldn't love that unless it was, the kid was like out of college or out of high school, not out of the house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So she can have a kid, but he's got to be on his own.
Yeah, probably. Or like a really hot 18-year-old daughter who's got got a thing for me. So when I dump her,
that would be a plus. Yeah. That'd be a plus. She'd be okay to live at home then. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to go back into the dating. Like I think what you, the one thing you said is like, you shouldn't really be going to like have to go to new places to like look for women. Just the places you normally go, talk to women.
Yeah.
Every time you go to the grocery store, start a conversation with a woman there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that rather than running around and trying to go to bars and stuff, I mean, I still wouldn't, I'd have to not shop for everything I get on Amazon. Occasionally I would have to go to the bookstore, maybe. I don't know. You know what I mean? But I don't know. It's either going to happen or it's not. I'm trying to think. I did go out the other day. I'm trying to think if there's any. There's a guy. He's a Marine. A lot of military play at my casino. Got to hanging out with this guy. He wanted to like learn the area. And I'm like, I haven't gone out forever. Let's go out. So we did have fun. And I talked to a few women. I don't know. I mean, there wasn't. I don't like drinking, first of all. So, I mean, I like it. I tried.
Really? Oh, okay. All right. You like it?
Well,
it shouldn't be.
Well, for whatever reason, when I drink, I feel it intensifies my physical pain. Usually, though, if my back's or my knee's hurting that day, then it increases
with alcohol.
Drinking. Whereas it's the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite. Pot is just so superior, and on many levels, it helps me sleep at night.
Yeah.
You're drinking, sometimes you got to get up and pee, sometimes you're hungover in the morning, So, I mean, I have buddies here who want to go out drinking, and I mean, I do, and I'm like, well, I'm going to have my edibles first, and then you're going to see me basically try to sip,
try to sip a gin and tonic without
anything. But, this last time I went out, I did more than that. I drank a lot on top of getting, Yeah, I don't know, Steve. We'll see. I think I told you one of my new obsessions. I love Airbnb. I haven't used it. I mean, I love using the app.
Okay.
And just looking like, what kind of house can I get in Nepal for $100 a night? You know what I mean? Like just, or traveling around and naturally by scale, you can live in the more amazing place if you get more people. If you make sense, you know what I mean? Rather than if you want to live in like a really beautiful house.
Yeah. You can rent a house split up between five people a lot cheaper than you can get an apartment for one guy is what you're saying.
Sure. And nicer. So some of these places like looking at, I had so much fun on the Greek islands last time. So looking at places there and there's like these mansions for like $200 a night.
Yeah.
For like, but you can bring 10 people with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I convinced one guy at the casino. I said, we came up, he's a big surfer and he surfs every day. And he's got his whole crew of surfers and they've been to Costa Rica and Mexico. And I said, dude, why not like the South Pacific? We'll go to Fiji. I had a bunch of Fiji houses on my, and I started showing them. He's like, we're doing it. So there's one place that I think sleeps 10. It's like $650 a night.
Okay.
It's so, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you're living the lifestyles of the rich and famous in Fiji, and it's, you know, right on the beach and the pool. And, you know, if you want to pay extra, this place, you know, you can hire a private chef to come in and blah, 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 masseuses. It's right near, you know, so it's all sorts of other amenities, but there's a bunch of places, and Fiji's like a bunch of islands. So I told them, I said, do the research, find out which is the best. This wouldn't be till the fall. But, anyways, I told myself, I want to bring a beautiful woman along for that trip.
Okay.
So okay. That's, I don't even know if this is going to be this guy's married. I think he was thinking this is a trip for the guys, you know, so we'll have
boys trip.
See how this
is. Well, you could always meet a beautiful woman over there.
Well, that's true. But I'm talking about in terms of maintaining any sort of incentive to talk to women. This is like what I have in my mind right now.
Okay. All right. Cool. Whatever gets it done.
Right, well, I never get it done, Steve. That's why I'm a loser. You still there? Did I lose you?
Oh, there we go. Okay, I got you. Okay. Yeah, that's what we did on our last trip to Brazil is Joe and I usually rented an apartment. One of the last ones we stayed in, it was a three-bedroom apartment, which the third bedroom just completely went unused. Three-bedroom, two-bath. It was $82 a night, so it was $41 each. And it was up seventh floor, awesome view. It's like you can get amazing deals once you get the hell out of the U.S. And
right.
Start going to some of these other countries because the American dollar just goes so much further, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then when you get these houses, these Airbnbs, just go to the grocery store and your per meal cost is only, you know, a buck or two as opposed to going to a restaurant and paying 10, you know? So you can really make your dollar stretch a long ways just by doing that, you know?
So. Well, as we know, I'd be less meticulous about you with controlling costs on the vacation, you know, not my thing. I wish I could do that, Steve. What's the other, the other thing? I want to get a comfort dog. Well, I love dogs.
Maybe I could get you a Paris Hilton person. You could carry it around with you everywhere.
Exactly. Well, no, yeah, I want a little lap dog. Okay. Well, I've always wanted a dog, and I've said this before. One of the reasons I want to get married is it's so terrible. I want health insurance and I want a dog, because right now I can't get a dog on my own because it's just.
Well, wives are good for that. They can pick up the poop and feed it. And
right. Well, yeah. More just so the dog has some place to be at night. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
But I love dogs, but the dogs need a lot of love and exercise, and I don't really have a schedule for that. But I'm like, well, if I could bring it to work.
Uh huh.
But to do that, you have to establish that your need for a comfort dog, which I think I could do. I could just have, hey, guys, can you just videotape me playing poker for the next month? Do me a favor every time I scream or yell or punch my head, you know?
Yeah.
But so it is something I've thought about. There's actually a woman at my casino who I know a little bit, she's really into all the rescue dog stuff.
Oh, perfect. Does she have health insurance?
She's married, but I mean, just in terms of offering a little mentorship on the best way to go about this.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I was thinking something different. I was like, okay, that's an obstacle. It doesn't mean it can't happen.
Right.
What kind of dog would this be? Would it be like a teacup chihuahua or a little Doberman, mini Doberman pincher, or some type of little poodle?
It doesn't have to be. I would like a lighter, you know, under 30 pounds for sure. I really like the little French bulldog.
Okay.
I mean, some of my favorite dogs are probably, you know, too. But there was a guy there the other day. He had, you know, had his big black lab in there. So it doesn't have to be. But yeah, probably a little dog. I like, I don't know. Like, I got on a couple sites that had the rescue dogs. They're a lot of little cute little mutt dogs. You know what I mean? They're small, kind of half chihuahua, half. It doesn't really matter. I want something that doesn't need a lot of exercise though. There's certain dogs just for to be fair to the dog, like a Jack Russell Terrier, for example, wants to run.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't even have a place like that near you have to be leashed near the beach, obviously. I don't, I'm sure there's like dog parks where the, where I can throw a ball somewhere within 15 minutes where the dog can, you know, where I can go every, you know, once a day for that. But basically that's, yeah, I live a pretty sedentary lifestyle, so it's not fair. So I will, that was the one thing that you look into, which certain dogs don't, like the bulldog, for example. He just wants to go outside and poop and then get back in the house.
Yeah, he doesn't need to go run. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? So
that's probably something you should definitely, my girlfriend's dog, oh my God, this dog just wants to run and play catch. I've never seen a dog play catch so well before in my life. Like, you just keep throwing it, and he brings it right back and drops it at your feet and then barks because he wants to do it again. And then when he goes for a run, I took him for a run yesterday, and it was 3 miles, and the dog was just like, can we go more? He's just got so much fucking energy.
Had a great time, huh?
Holy shit.
What kind of dog is it?
I put myself on the spot now. I don't know. It's about maybe 35 pounds, like a little... What are the sheep herder dog kind of things?
Could be a heeler, maybe, or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah, he's
a collie or active. Something. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. He just likes to run and play catch. But yeah, if you got a dog like that, I think you and the dog would probably be pretty miserable.
Right. No. So you got that. I'll have to, you know, find a breed that and a dog with a good temperament that doesn't mind, you know, people in crowds. Yeah, if I do this again, this will all be pushed back till. But you know, when you get a dog, I do love the dog, and then it's my father won't even travel. He refuses to let his dogs be with anyone else because he's the only one who knows how it's patterns. And I mean, he would miss the dog, but it's also it's in his mind. There's no one else who could give it what it needs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like I'm going to at some point. I'm going to go to visit Maine this year for a week or two. This is, you know, the annual thing.
Good.
So,
good.
You know, I don't want to leave. I don't really want to travel with a dog probably. And well, you know, I guess it wouldn't be, if it's a comfort dog, I can bring him right on the plane.
Yeah. You can get one of those, what are they called? The therapy dogs or support dogs or something like that. People,
I think they're called comfort dogs, but maybe they're just called therapy dogs. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's different than the service dog. I was using the word service dog for a while. That's something different.
Yeah, that one, I think you have to be blind or something to have one of those. But yeah, they got these comfort dogs all over the fucking place now. People are even bringing bunny rabbits on planes. It's like, wow, I think we've gone too far in that direction.
Well, yeah, I mean, how about the one woman who tried to bring a peacock on a plane?
Are you serious?
Comfort peacock, yeah.
It was only a matter of time. I joked about the goose.
No, I mean, it's just, this is someone who's just hoping to get a lawsuit to get, you know, we live in time. Yeah, we got so many fucking professional victims and deadbeats. I can almost guarantee that's what it was. Oh yeah, kick me off. That now I got my, here's my note from my psychologist.
Yep.
that kid shit kind of, so I guess I'm kind of taking advantage of it. I mean, I would be the person who would be, I would be tilted much less if I had a dog there for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's any, I wish I loved, this is, I've really turned a bad corner here, Steve. I mean, I think I've said the only time I was really like an enthusiastic student was my first 3 months at Tournament Poker Edge. Every day I'd wake up, like they didn't have the calendar telling you what was coming up. You just get up and see what it was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was exciting. It literally was like Christmas Day every day for like 3 months. And I watched everyone. And since then it's just not my instinct, certainly. You know what I mean? I don't mind some passive, like having, putting a video on,
yeah.
But a lot of times it's just cause like, I feel like I'm hanging out with KB or Mark,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And like the hand histories were okay. I mean, I wasn't a bad poker student. We would do a hand history and I'd pay attention if they're an interesting spot up, but I've turned the corner where I just don't really care. It's not that, but like, even when I gave up on studying, at least if Carlos and somebody were if was in the room having a discussion about some hand, I would want to stop and listen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like now, since I've kind of figured out the low limit cash, I mean, all I have to do is a little work, Steve, and I add $20 an hour to my win rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like I've said, I've made like the big leap in terms of like work ethic, in terms of understanding bankroll management, in terms of understanding game selection, and in terms of tilt control. So I've become a much better poker pro. I am a poker pro now for sure. I mean, yeah. Mentally in how I conduct myself, but my poker game is, it's just to survive. I probably need to get better. you know, like I said, the poker, we can have Alex on. The ecology is always changing.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden you need to really be a really good player just to survive, because all of a sudden it's going to get tougher.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's nights of the week at the tour casino where all of a sudden there's just no dead money coming in. So I really need to be going after guys who are just worse than poker than me. And amongst the regs there, they don't exist really. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this will be a challenge down the line. You know, can I actually, I don't know if it means, I mean, I think it's just not really reinvigorating my love for the game. It's just,
you're just having no motivation to study. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, it's even worse than that. I'm curious to a lot of things that are going on. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. So I do have one buddy, and we send hands back and forth, and I definitely get the better end of this deal, because he's much better at poker than I am.
Yeah.
So there will be some moments, but yeah, I don't know. It's just like I said, if a poker discussion's going on, that's never been my favorite subject. You know, if I'm in Vegas, I'd rather talk about, you know, oh, did you see the tits on the dealer at 442 or whatever? You know? No, not really that. I mean, no, but I used to like enjoy those conversations to some extent. So now I never have a great work ethic. That's why I'm a goddamn poker player. Let's be honest. That's why I have never accomplished anything in terms of being a writer or an artist. I think things that I probably have enough innate talent for. But yeah, it's just even dialed back a notch where it's not just, I'm not watching videos. I went from loving videos to like not watching videos, but sometimes you're in the presence of video and there's spots where I'm like, okay, I really want to know if I did this right or wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, like Carlos is obviously the other extreme. I mean, he's pretty much like looked at every hand he's played in Bovada for the last, he did a hand risk review of all of them.
Yeah.
And if there's any, like, at this point, he knows what everyone's going to do and what the proper response is, I'm sure 95% of the time. But if there's any gray areas, he really wants to know the answer.
Yeah.
What is the best thing to do here? And like, I know that I've learned you don't have to be really good at poker to make a living at poker.
Yeah.
But that could be changing. And why not just try to become really good at poker? So when I'm 55 years old, if I have no other source of income, I can be making 75 an hour and having only work 30 or 40 hours a week rather than right now, which is just grinding to hell, grinding like mad just to survive. So, I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, that's kind of, I can't really articulate. There's one guy there, I guess, who used to be, everyone said he was just the guy, the crushers there, the 1025, the 510 guys are kind of mocking him. He's even a couple years younger than me, but he's been doing this for so long. And they're just like, he is just done. He just does not know what he's doing. He cannot beat good players anymore.
Oh.
And it's not like, I don't think he's taken a downturn with drugs or, you know, there is like a physical fatigue. You're doing it for so long, but if you're not enjoying the game and you're just, you understand it less. I don't know. I mean, I don't have to tell you that it doesn't take long to just if you don't play tournaments for a while or think about it, you sit down and you're just like, it should be like riding a bicycle. It's not like I forgot how I used to bet size or which hands I used to three bet here.
Yeah.
And everybody's doing stuff a little bit different.
Yeah.
And you're not adjusting and you just get lost real quick, I think.
Yeah.
That's another one of the reasons why I'm like, well, surely I'm certainly going to be plus EV in every tournament I play there. But the margin of advantage is, the edge is so small, I think, now for me. I'm kind of on crack the code here. You play long hours at the casino and avoid playing hands against the good players and play hands against the bad players. And you make money, you make a living.
Yeah. Play people that are worse than you.
But generally that's really not, long term, that's just not going to be enough. It really isn't. At some point I'm going to have to really aspire to get better or get out, I think, but we'll see. For the time being, you know, whatever. I'm as confident in surviving in poker as ever. But like I said, I do have a lot of expenses, Steve. It is crazy.
What do you think would be the number one thing you could do to get better at cash? I mean, you're already a pro, like you said, but you know, to get yourself up to like you said, 75 an hour or something.
You know, there are training sites, Red Chip Poker and Crush Live Poker.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I mean, like when I do occasionally like listen to one of those, I mean, it's pretty, Jason's actually come over a couple times.
Okay. You know,
we've watched videos. I mean, I'm a smart guy, Steve. So there is, I get better at poker even when I'm like at the table stoned and not paying attention, I think a little bit. I mean, just by watching, I will perk up sometimes, you know, watching some of the better players and kind of emulating. Basically, the same thing as tournaments, Steve, studying and getting a coach.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess but I have the resources here where I could log hands and like I have Alex and other people who will look at them for me, but even that I just don't feel like doing.
Yeah. Okay. It's just a lack of,
motivation, work ethic. I mean, even watching like 5 hours of videos a week,
mm-hmm.
5 hours of material, whatever that is. Let's just say, let's just even
add Monday through Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be videos. It could be just whatever, reading, getting on the forum on TPE and where they discuss cash hands or discussing cash hands with their friends. And I don't know, man. A lot of the stuff, like you like it, you're trading. It's not even just about money for you, Steve. You like playing the game properly.
Yeah. It's the patterns. I love pattern recognition.
You know, yeah. You like, yeah. Or you like, I don't know. There's always some little stupid prop bets there where people are.
Yep.
So it's like people they got these spin the wheel drawings where they pull a name out, depending on how long you've been there. They put a spin the wheel thing out.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pull a ticket. So the guys are betting on, you know, they're doing like a fantasy draft of who's going to be there.
Yeah.
So, but this requires paying attention to who plays the most hours and like knowing the names of the 1-2 players who are the majority of the player pool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like there's edges in this little, for sure.
Yeah.
Who is there? Like I miss half the drawings because, you know, I'm there midnight to 6 a.m. every day where the drawings are between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m.
Okay.
So you'd have to think about that. Who are the people who are their all their grinding time is during the day?
Yeah.
So I wanted no part of the fantasy league because I'm giving up a couple of dollars just by entering it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you would probably get into this some sort of thing.
I could
see. You'd be the one, you know. Freddie hasn't been here all week, so he doesn't have as many tickets in the barrel as he normally does, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm doing that now with my girlfriend's real into baseball, and I am too, but she probably actually knows more about the sport than I do. But I see the same kind of patterns with that. So like some of the bets I'll make on baseball will be number of hits, runs, and RBIs. Number of strikeouts, over under total runs, stuff like that. And you look through patterns, you look at ERAs, like just, you know, what's so awesome about baseball that I just haven't found with any other sport is you can go through a player and you can look at every single at bat that guy has had, all of it. And you can see how he's matched up with that pitcher. I mean, there's just so much fucking data that you can get from this. And
this is what Mark does for a living now, because it's more profitable and also more enjoyable for him, I think, than poker. Yeah. Daily fantasy leagues. So yeah, you would probably get into that for sure.
Yeah. It's fun. I like it. Cause you can just literally, like, I can look through a guy's entire year season. I can look through, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019, and I try not to really like consciously look for any pattern. I basically just scan my eyes down certain lines and see what they are, go to the next year, see what that is, go to 2019 this year and see what 30 something, 40 something games he's played so far. And then I stop and ask myself, what pattern did I see? And usually something will come to me. It'll be the kind of thing of like, every time this guy gets two or more hits on his third game, 90% of the time, his fourth game, he does the same thing again. It's like something in that guy's head just says, you know what? I'm just on a fucking roll right now, and it doesn't matter who the pitcher is. I'm just going to get a hit. And then you look to see where he is in the last 10 games that he's played, and if that in any way filters into that pattern that you've recognized. And if it does, you bet it. If it doesn't, you don't. And then you go on to the next player.
I have a feeling Mark would mock that a little bit. That matchups is the key thing for sure. You could have a left-hand hitter who's on a real heater, you know. But if he's facing the best left-handed pitcher in the game at a stadium with a great defensive outfield, or you know, I mean, all sorts of, then it's just a bad bet.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like you should be counting hand combos and not like watching how the guy eats his chocolate chip cookie or, you know, kind of thing. But no, I mean, I see what you mean. You have to respect that element of it. But it's like, we had James Gettinger on, and I think I got a little glimpse of him doing some work preparation for betting on golf one week.
Yeah, I
guess that was a thing. And like they spent a lot of, and they look at the birdie percentage, and like, you know, like basically him and Pete were so smart. They're creating their own software.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To analyze all the different information. And it's never like, well, this guy's been in a great mood on that interview there. I think he's really ready to kill it this weekend. He's saying a lot of positive things. You know, or, you know, he's been, I mean, in golf, I think momentum, you know, if someone wins two tournaments in a row, you have to, but I think matchups, especially, I think Mark loves the NBA.
Okay.
That has a lot to do with it too. I think, if you got probably one great team going, it's a weak team. If you got a player on the great team, like he might be sitting on the bench the whole fourth quarter.
Yeah.
He might not be putting up the stats.
Yeah.
Or you're looking at matchups. Like you have a guard who scores like mad, but the other team just can't defend inside. So you know that coach is going to be trying to concentrate on getting the inside, the post game going kind of shit. You know, so I think that's probably the percentage of it, you know, matchups and math. But,
yeah, you know that, yeah, I do look at who is pitching and how they've done against that batter.
Right.
And, of course, yeah. Well, like I made a bet yesterday or the day before. This guy, the batter that I was going to bet on, was only 2-for-20 against this pitcher. Couldn't tell you either guy's name, don't remember. But, you know, he faced him 20 times, only got a hit twice. And no walks and a bunch of strikeouts. So I took the under on him. And I'm sure his coach saw the same thing because he never played. So the bet was off.
I was, oh, okay.
You know, there are sometimes. Then another guy that I did bet on yesterday, or was it the day before? They're all running together now. He was 8-for-20 against him. So he's hitting 400 against that guy. So I took the over. So those do help, but I also, maybe you're right. Maybe it has nothing to do with streaky patterns like that.
I don't, you know, like you said, it's definitely more matchups kind of thing. I think for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And what ballpark they're in too. Cause some ballparks are just a hitter's ballpark and other ones are not.
Sure.
They're long. They're all different dimensions, you know? So,
but I think, Mark and those guys work very hard to be like winning players, though. No, just pointing that out. When you say I'm going to become a professional gambler, I'm going to do a little of this, I'm going to do a little of that, I don't know. Yeah, if you, like you said, well, you've already seen that in the investment thing where you really need to be at your desk looking at and studying it 8 hours a day if you want to maximize profits.
Yeah.
Sports, you know, so daily fantasy sports is definitely the same. Poker, you know, like I said, is the beauty of it is you don't have to, I can just show up at work, I think, and get the money, you know. Yeah. Work, quote, you know. But yeah, just when you think about you know, becoming a professional gambler investor, you know, I think it's, yeah, I mean, it's pattern recognition to some extent. But I mean, it's also, have you ever seen the guys where you walk by the they do it, I've seen it at the craps table, you see it at the roulette table. Of course, they now actually show you all the previous numbers that have spun for roulette.
Yeah they show you the last 15 of them or whatever.
So a lot of people say, well, the seven's coming here. Well, we know the seven's coming, but so is the six, the five. They all have the exact same chance coming each time. So, you know, if you're looking for patterns there, it's pretty silly.
I do work with a couple of guys that used to be, they were just shy of getting into the majors. You know what I mean? Like they were just for years.
Right. That's very competitive golf.
Playing in the minors and just couldn't quite fucking seal the deal. You know what I mean? And so they've forgotten more about baseball than I'll ever know. And I've asked them about that, you know, with streaks like that. And they said, they both universally said, they said, yeah, there's times where before the game even starts, you know, you're getting on. Like, you just know it. You can feel it. You're running.
Right.
It just doesn't fucking matter. You're going to get it, and you do. And then he's, oh, there's other games where you can't articulate why, but you're just not feeling it. And he's like, and I told him about that. I said, you know, I've noticed with this one player, Eric Ibar, if he got a hit four games in a row, he always got a hit the fifth game. And I said, then it was 50-50 whether he'd get a hit the sixth game. And I said, do you think he knows that? Does he, like, or is this just something that he would never put together? And they're all, oh, God, no. He knows it. Like, he knows it. He knows it. I'm like, really? Okay, so, you know, players do recognize those patterns and stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they both said that. So, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm putting a little bit too much stock in it. I just
like, well, yeah, I think, yeah, you're putting, I think a lot of, I mean, like, there's a lot of people, obviously, if you go in a poker room, there's many people are bad, but they're like trying to make good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't have, whereas like the fantasy sports game, like half the people are just taking their favorite players and their favorite team.
Oh, yeah. We had a,
you know what I mean? So this is
for his fantasy football team. I'm like, oh, wow, you do not understand the point of this game.
So, I mean, those guys win sometimes too. I just think there's more people who are just purely gambling probably in the daily fantasy sports than there are in poker.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not doing daily fantasy. I'm just doing single bets on players.
No, I'm just going, if you want to talk about, yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking along those lines where that's why it's maybe more, why a lot of poker players have gotten out. Because even a lot of the losing players now, maybe we've already had the discussion. It's like, well, their goal is just to lose, to break even, to lose or lose the least possible so they can keep coming and playing, enjoying poker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're
playing to have fun and it's just entertainment for them.
Well, a lot of them are just making, you know, making good decisions. Like if they won't go more than one buy-in, or they'll drop down in stakes. They're kind of doing game selects without probably even consciously thinking about it necessarily.
Yeah.
And if they're down and they get even, or if they're up big, they just quit the game.
Yeah.
It seems to me that in just 5 years of being here, I've noticed the player pool is doing that with much, much better.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but now it's...
They're not just hemorrhaging, going back to the ATM every time.
Well, yeah, there's guys who do that. But, well, maybe I think it has to do with the 2-5 player pool, too, maybe, that I'm in.
Okay.
The player pool maybe has changed a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, quickly, I don't know. It's, as always, Steve, we don't prepare too much, so we're darting around things. But
this doesn't seem like we've just prepped for this for hours before we got on.
I don't know. I think you could listen to this
in episodes here. I think we're entitled to a little bit of leeway.
Well, yeah, you could cut up the snippets of discussion in 100 different ways, and you would not be losing any narrative momentum. Well, I won't even go into it. There's more, again, little card room changes. And, you know, like I said, it is kind of, I pushed for the casino to get sort of push the 2-5.
Yeah.
Make it more prominent than the 5-5, which was very good for me.
Yeah.
And I also, this is kind of just because the pros hate me there. So I kind of came up with it. Plus I know guys who are, stop coming there that I'm kind of friends with just because it's the $800 buy-in is too low for them.
Okay.
So I came up with, why don't we have one day a week where we let's make Thursday night the 5-5-10 night.
Okay.
And so I organized that and we got to get 5-5-10 and everybody's excited because we were going to kind of mum's the word and show up before the pros kind of did kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So went that night and it was like a perfect storm. Then game ran for 60 straight hours.
Wow.
So I can't really take credit for that. A couple guys who were willing to play all night came And the first night it was like this one guy who's like kind of ran like $400 into like 19,000.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, he played like for 2 days straight.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of money at the table and the place was just bursting with energy.
Yeah.
So I can't really take credit for the fact that the same thing has happened 4 weeks in a row now, where a game has started. Normally this 5-5-10, just there'd be times it just didn't run at all for like a week or two.
Yeah.
So it is kind of funny, like, you know, and naturally I thought this would get me on the side of the pros and they're like, oh man, you think you have something to do with this? I'm like, well, yeah, this is actually all me, frankly. Well, not really.
It
it's sustained because new players have come in, obviously. You know, there's more LA pros, of course, immediately coming down. There's some people who should have no business playing this game who've just dumped a lot of money in there.
Yeah.
Like you can kind of, so it's cost. So I have not played this game. I guess this is the point of this thing. This has kind of cost me money. Well, I don't know. It's too early to say. It's probably EV neutral. There's players in that game, which I cannot afford because immediately right after they went from a 2K buy-in to a 3K buy-in and they're straddling a lot. So it's, you know, predictably like the pros there manipulated it. So there's more money getting on the table.
Of course.
They really didn't have to work too hard at it. So there's people just dumping shitloads of money who would normally lose that money at 2-5 or I'll be playing. So on the other hand, I can go up there and I can kind of bum hunt there. Or when the game is good, I can go in. A lot of times it's just, I haven't touched the game in like a couple of weeks, but there'll be days where it's like really good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I had one $4,000 session over there.
Nice.
So, and like I said, as long as you just want more people coming in the room.
Yeah.
So there's been a couple times where the 2-5 is broken and the 5-5-10 has kept going. Like that I didn't picture happening. I thought on busy nights, but there's been, you know, guys have come in and gotten going on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night. And that one pulls the players over. And then by 11 o'clock, I have a choice to be seen go over there on a table that's now 5-5-10-20, you know, put a lot of variance and just gamble and, you know, risk losing 3 or 4,000. Or sit down and play some 2-3 and just try to make $30 an hour and get my rake back, which is what I've done a couple times.
What did they give for rake back? $2 an hour?
$5 an hour.
They give you $5 an hour at 2-3?
Well, if you any game there, but that's if you play 100 hours, you get $500.
Okay. So I was like, Jesus.
I mean, I'm going to do that all the time. So I just call that the rake back. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting how that, like I said, there's been times I'm like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And there's been times like, Jesus Christ, why did I
have this wonderful idea that I shared?
Well, like I said, it's brought some people back and, you know, there's definitely a lot more energy there and it works. And I mean, Thursday night, it is Thursdays, people come and there's been two tables running every time on Thursday by dinner time, pretty much. So that is because of me, I think. But the fact that it's really gotten big is because of some of these other guys who picked up and taken it and are hustling and calling people and love the game. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of money in Southern California here in this area.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they shouldn't have a consistent game with a bigger than $800 buy-in, obviously.
Yeah.
So it's good for the Carter. I wish I had a bankroll. I mean, I could go over there. I mean, obviously there's some good pros there, but there's always – there's been some guys who are not good with lots of money in front of them. I have no access to that because I'm scared of money over there and people will sniff it out. Although I forgot to tell you. Yeah. This would be an example of, and I don't know if it's submitting to social pressure, but you know, I'm not going to hit and run in a shorthanded game with guys I know.
Yeah.
That should probably really be the one where I don't mind hitting him. Where you don't want to do it is against like casual amateur players. So they're like, wait a second, this guy just made money to take off.
Yeah.
Like all these other guys. But quickly this was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 in the morning on like this past Saturday morning, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd gone home the night before, but came in early and the 5-5-10 was still running. As was the 2-5. I played the 2-5 for a little bit. I was down like 400 after an hour. I said, you know what? Let's just go buy in for $800 over there and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it was just four-handed. And then someone else left, so it was four-handed still, but you know what I mean? Like somebody left, so it wasn't five-handed. And we made it was it 5-10-20-40? I think
my God. Wow.
But it, actually, if you're buying in short, it kind of works out good. So I lost 1,800 of the buy-in. I bought in again and ran it up to 4,200 because you're in like shove fold mode and people, you know, people raise to 100 and you shove 800 in and it's like, oh, I'm going to call it.
Oh yeah. I didn't think about that because you have 20 bigs.
Yeah. I mean, but then I got deeper and then once I was up to 4,000, I'm like, ugh, I really want to go home right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's just, I was looking at the clock. I'm like, I'm going to play 30 more minutes. And
well, who were you playing with? Were they all regular pros or was it like regular amateurs or what?
No, it's, but like I said, the lineup doesn't matter almost if everybody has that in a shorthanded game where everyone's got a lot of chips. I mean, it does, but you know, there's going to be like just high variance kind of spots when people are pushing there. Yeah. So there's one, no, I mean, it doesn't matter, but there's one guy there who's really elite pro. And then the other two guys were amateur guys, but amateur guys who love playing for stacks, who love gambling. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So I finally, and this one kid I know, we're friends, and he's stuck, he just becomes very gambly.
Yeah.
And he was like stuck like 15 or 20,000. I don't know, like a lot of money. I didn't bug him for it, but I could, from what other people were saying and the amount of chips on the table and how many times he'd been, I could tell that he was having a real bad night.
Yeah.
So he opened to like 120. Mm-hmm. I forget the position. I think I was out of position, so I remember. And I made it 375 with ace king suited.
Okay.
And he just insta shipped and he had me covered. So I had.
What did you have in front of you? 4,200?
I think I had 3,900 at this time.
Wow.
You can run it twice in this game. So I said, can we run it twice?
You can?
Yes. So that was a factor. I said, you can't fold there, Steve.
No,
I don't think you can. Not against this player in this situation.
Not and that if, spot, no.
Especially when you can run it twice. So he said, sure. And he had pocket tens and won both of them.
No.
Ran it twice. So
stinger.
That was, I mean, that's my Vegas trip right there, pretty much.
Yeah.
3,900. You know, if I'm buying, if I sell half my action and buy in for 8,000, and you know what I mean? So it's like, I either need to get like the courage for the, I mean, I can also shut it down, but it's, you know, and just like, oh, okay, I'm only playing aces or kings. And I mean, people know what you're doing, but at least you're not leaving the
table. Yeah. Four-handed. What are you going to do there?
But you can't do that four-handed. Yeah. You can't do. And you know,
you just got to call it off. That's when the bankroll comes in.
Yeah. I mean, I only had 375. I could have picked up my $3,600 bucks and still, you know, have made
$2,000
bucks there. So it's not a mistake to leave.
But that with tens, he's also doing it with ace queen, you know, and like you just got him there, and you walk away with $8,000, you know.
Right. Yeah. And I'm obviously supposed to be winning one of those there. I did flop top two pair, and the guy four flushed me on the second one. You know, so it
was, yeah.
Yeah, it sucks, but
yeah, you can't.
Bankroll's an issue, Steve. That's a big part of the equation here.
That's the name of the game.
That's why I probably shouldn't go to Vegas, and that's why I have to. Well, I am game selecting pretty well at the casino, so.
That's why you should go to Vegas, my friend. We'll just do lower buy-ins, and we'll get you back.
Or bigger buy-ins, so I have a bankroll for life. Okay, Stevie, should we call it a make it a wrap here? Any people you want to have on the show? Any brainstorms?
Let's see. Who do we want to have on next? We haven't had KB on in a while. Maybe we'll get him.
I forgot. I've been sending him some hands, and he's been giving me some analysis. He's been very kind with that.
Oh, good, good. Good. Yeah, maybe we should have him back on just before the WSOP. We can shout out with the TB meetup and all that'll be. He's always a great fucking guest. The guy's just so comfortable.
I think Alex Venosa might go on again here. He was trying to disassociate himself from us for a while there, but
he was. Yeah, I was a little hurt, but I think that has passed. I think he's come around. So we should have
him. He's got some interesting things going on in his life too. So he'd be a good guest.
Good.
But,
good. Yeah. Cool. Well, if you guys want to keep up with Mikey at Mike Snyderman on Twitter, if you want to follow me at HUP Podcast, don't forget you get your free Elliot Rowe MP3, the 7-minute tilt buster. Put it right on your phone. Listen to it to the next time before you play. And check out Alex Fitzgerald's free video. The link is in the show notes. If you decide to buy from either program, use the code HUPOKER and score yourself a discount. Thank you for tuning in. And here is your weekly motivational speech.
Pain is inevitable. How many of you know, whether you're rich or poor, you can't avoid pain? Doesn't matter what nationality you are, you will have pain. Doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter how many cars you've got, you will have pain. No one can escape pain, but we can learn how to manage pain. Because pain is inevitable, but misery is optional.
When life gets on top of you and you feel like it's all becoming too much, it's easy to let things spiral out of control. That place where you feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. Things don't go your way, that promotion at work you don't get, you don't make the team, your business is struggling, the bills are piling up. When this happens, the easy thing to do is just to roll over, to lie there and let life treat you like a little bitch, to hold your hands up and say, this is just the way life is, this is just what happens to me. These moments in life are always going to be there. Don't think for one second there comes a stage in your life where this doesn't happen. But what you've got to start to do is to take back control of your life. Stop being a victim. Stop letting life push you around and start fighting back. Because the minute you tell yourself that you control this is the minute you can start to change it. It all starts the moment you take responsibility and say to yourself, I can make out of this life what the fuck I want. And no one and nothing is going to shape my destiny but me. You got to stare all that shit in the face and say, you can't beat me, I'm too strong. It ain't gonna be easy. Most of the time you're gonna feel like there's no way out, that you can't do it. But listen to me when I say there is always hope. But you have to take control, attack it head on. Because as soon as you do this, just once, just like a muscle lifting weights, you become stronger. You become comfortable being uncomfortable. And before you know it, you become fucking untouchable from all that external bullshit that on a daily basis pops up to kick you in the teeth. You become a machine and nothing on the outside can affect you because your mind is trying to beat it down. Never run, always fight.
The rewards in life don't always go to the biggest or the bravest or the cleverest. The rewards in life go to the dogged, to the determined, to the tenacious. Those who get back on their feet when they're kicked and they get up again and again. The rewards go to those who understand what it means to never give up.